travel, I have kind of gotten into the habit of looking on the internet and reading the reviews of hotels. Didn't take me long to figure out that most of what I was interested in wasn't really what other folks are interested in, particularly the people who will go to the trouble of writing a review for a hotel. Quite frequently, the review of a particular hotel will contain some statement like, service could be better. We are very familiar with the concept of service, and I suppose the best place to find good service is at your favorite restaurant. And when the service isn't good at the eating place, we tend to let that place fall from our favorites list. The point is, we're all very concerned with good service. This morning, I want us to look at a passage from the New Testament, John chapter 13, as we study the subject of better service. Over the past couple of weeks, we've noticed some really significant things about Christian service, both things that have to do with our serving God and things that have to do with our serving our fellow man. For example, we have noted the fact that service is often difficult, and people tend these days to try to avoid service or being servants or rendering service. We don't really teach our children anymore to grow up to be good servants. It's not very often that you hear a child say that when you ask them what they want to be when they grow up. If they were to say, I want to be a better servant, you'd probably think something maybe was wrong a little bit. There is this idea that service and serving is beneath us. It's something that we don't think we have time to do, or something that we think somebody else really ought to take care of. Another thing that we've observed thus far in our study of service is that service quite often, particularly in spiritual things, goes unnoticed. And often a servant is frequently anonymous. Somehow I think that's the way it really ought to be. In fact, there is something about service and serving itself that tends to be quite the opposite of recognition. And yet, in our culture today, there is something that seems to be just almost ingrained in us that we feel like we need to be recognized for whatever we do. News stories are not scarce at all, covering great philanthropic efforts, huge sums of money that have been given by somebody or some company. Everybody who serves these days wants to be acknowledged and recognized. If you're out for recognition, if you're out for being honored, you're probably not going to be a very good servant. Last Sunday morning, we also noticed the fact that serving often interrupts our daily routine. It can be just downright inconvenient sometimes. We observed what someone had written regarding that passage that talks about Jesus saying that he went about doing good. We're reminded of the fact that the Lord went out in his daily work every day, no doubt with a routine or with a schedule in mind, and yet we see him constantly being interrupted by those who came to him, those who needed something, those who wanted his help. And it was suggested that perhaps while it is important that we study the steps of Jesus during his ministry, it might be very profitable if we could take a closer look at the stops of Jesus as he allowed himself to be constantly interrupted in being a better servant to those around him. There's a fourth thing that we've noted already in our study, and I'll review this one just briefly, and that is the fact that there is great joy in Christian service. God is very pleased with our service. There is great satisfaction. Psalm 100 tells us to serve the Lord with gladness, and that in fact our serving God is very pleasing to him. Now, as we begin this study this morning, I think I might have a good opportunity here to share with you what I'm calling some common misconceptions about service and Christian service or servanthood that perhaps need to be addressed. First of all, there are some who see Christian service as purely optional. In other words, they believe that you can be a faithful servant or a faithful Christian without being a servant. And I think we need to give a little attention to that idea, because I don't think that idea is correct. I believe the Bible teaches us that somehow whatever it is we're doing in order to accomplish the matter of Christianity is incomplete if we're not willing to be servants along the way. As I said in the very beginning of our worship service, our goal should be to one day hear God tell us, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." And in fact, I believe it would be quite impossible to separate Christianity from servanthood, or servanthood from Christianity. And so, if we've got this idea that, yes, I'll be a Christian, but now don't look to me for any kind of service, I'm afraid we've misunderstood something along the way, because one of the qualities of Christianity is servanthood. Then there are some who have become convinced that serving is simply the satisfaction of duty and therefore can be performed without the involvement of a loving and compassionate heart. In other words, serving is kind of like checking off things from your list. Okay, I've done that one. Now what's next? It always bothers me a little bit when I see people who seemingly exude that kind of an attitude in a situation where someone is in need and they are there just almost grudgingly, thinking of every reason why this is a great inconvenience to them. I realize that I'm speaking to a group of wonderful Christian servants, and perhaps you've never seen anybody act that way, but I have. I've heard the comments. I've seen the body language. Christian service is not just duty. It's not just part of the process that we've got to do in order to make it to the end. Christian servanthood is a quality of the life of one who has dedicated himself or herself to serving the Lord. Then another misconception about servanthood is that some folks seem to think that the requirement to serve diminishes as one stacks up time and maturity. I don't know where they got that idea from. It's certainly not the impression that I've gotten from being around some of God's senior servants, because some of those are the most dedicated servants I have ever seen. In fact, some of the greatest servants I have ever known are those whose bodies are racked with pain and whose lives are filled with every physical inconvenience, and yet they still press on after the matter of serving others and serving God. And while we may find ourselves from time to time grasping at every excuse we can find that comes with age and maturing, we are inspired by those who continually put us to shame, though they are twice our age and half as mobile, yet they continue to press on and serve. I see most of you have your Bibles, and I hope by now you've got them opened up to John chapter 13. Let's turn there and begin reading. We'll read verses 2 through 16 as we consider what the Lord told His apostles on the subject of better service. John chapter 13, beginning with verse 2. During the supper, the devil having already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, the son of Simon, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into His hands and that He had come forth from God and was going back to God, got up from supper, laid aside His garments, and taking a towel, He girded Himself. Then He poured water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which He was girded. So He came to Simon Peter. He said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" Jesus answered and said to him, "What I do to you, you do not realize now, but you will understand hereafter." Peter said to him, "Never shall you wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you have no part with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, then wash not only my feet, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "He who has bathed needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean. You are clean, but not all of you." For He knew that the one who was betraying Him was there. For this reason He said, "Not all of you are clean." So when He had washed their feet and had taken His garments and reclined at the table again, He said to them, "Do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for so I am. If I then, the Lord and the teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example that you also should do as I did to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a slave is not greater than his master, nor is one who is sent greater than the one who sent him." I want to point out to you two or three things that were kind of standing in the way of the service that Peter, Andrew, James, and John, and the others should have rendered. This occasion, of course, takes place at the time that they were observing the feast of the Passover, the occasion when the Lord then, after the supper, instituted the Lord's Supper and commanded that be done in remembrance of Him. Before they left here to go out, in fact, even before Judas had left, and he left ahead of the others, but before the leaving of any of them from this room, and John is the only writer who records Jesus then washing the feet of the apostles. Let me suggest to you, first of all, Number one, the disciples there were so much like we are in so many respects, but particularly in the fact that they were really too busy to see about the matter of washing feet. There was so much that needed to be done. There were so many things that needed to be tended to, and like any group of people, these apostles, well, some of them were good at some of the things, and some of them were not that good at some of the things, and so everybody really had to work together to accomplish what was needed in order to be an effective group as they followed along with the Lord. But here in the last few days, things had gotten particularly confusing, especially regarding some things that the Lord had told them and some things that they perhaps had failed to completely understand. Indeed, things that Jesus said, you will understand later. And as not only that confusion weighed heavy on their minds, the idea that something terrible was about to happen, and this matter of the Passover was not to be taken lightly. There were certain preparations that had been designated by the Lord to one or two of the disciples to go and secure the room and make sure everything was ready. And there were other things that had to be done as that time drew near. And there were just all kind of things that needed to be done. And foot washing wasn't really that high on the priority list. After all, we're doing a special work here. We're a special people. We are serving the Lord, and we're His people setting out on this mission to accomplish His work. And surely there are those who can take care of that other stuff. I relate that kind of thought process to you because that's one of the ones that I find myself treasuring the most. As I often tell myself, you know, I've got some other things that really need to be done, and I don't have time to take care of that little menial thing. And I'm sure there are others who'll take care of that. Like the apostles, I have to work really hard to keep myself from being too busy to serve. In that part of the world, it had been the custom for centuries that a servant was provided to wash the feet of everyone who came into a particular house as guests. Even in a poor household, if there was no servant, the host would often perform that duty of washing the feet of those who came in a time and in a place where everybody walked on the dusty streets and trails with open shoes or sandals, as we would call them. The course of a day's walking around would certainly give you dirty feet, and it was not only a sign of appreciation and honor, but it was a very refreshing thing to be able to go into someone's house and have someone there wash your feet. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, in verse 10, as the Apostle Paul sets forth the requirements regarding what the text calls a widow indeed, that is, one who is to be cared for at the expense of the church. Among the other things that he lists that this woman has done in verse 10, having a reputation for good works, and if she has brought up children and shown hospitality to strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet. If she has assisted those in distress, if she has devoted herself to every good work. Remember when Jesus went into the house of Simon, not Simon the leper, but Simon the Pharisee, who had insisted that Jesus come and sit at his table and eat with him. And you remember in Luke chapter 7, where as Jesus is there in the house of Simon, there is a woman who comes in. Having heard that Jesus was there, she was recognized as a sinful woman about the town. She began to wash the feet of Jesus with her tears. And she dried them with her hair and anointed them with ointment. And in turning to Simon, Jesus said, "Simon, here I am in your house, and you have not offered to wash my feet. And yet this woman," the implication was, "this woman upon whom you look down so severely has come in and washed my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair." I remember in 1 Samuel chapter 25, the story, the chapter that tells the story of that wicked man, Nabal, who refused to show any kind of consideration to David and his servants for all of the protection that they had afforded him and his flocks in the field. And in that chapter, it tells of that man's death from sickness. And it says that when David heard that Nabal was dead, David, having already met Nabal's very beautiful wife, Abigail, he sent his servants to Abigail, telling her that they had been sent to bring her back to be David's wife. Do you remember how that noble woman responded? Why, she'd been the wife of a man who owned a tremendous amount of land and flocks and herds that were almost innumerable. She was an important woman in the land. The text bears that out. Very highly regarded. In 1 Samuel chapter 25 and verse 41, when the servants of David came and delivered his proposal for marriage to her, the text says, "She arose and bowed with her face to the ground and said, 'Behold, your maidservant is a maid to wash the feet of my Lord's servants.'" But you know, sometimes I'm too busy. When I think back through the what I call sometimes the Hall of Fame among my brothers and sisters here at Redland Road, and I think about those many of whom have gone on to their eternal reward, how that if perhaps on some occasion you needed to find them and you didn't know where they were, you stood a pretty good chance of finding them at someone's house or someone's bedside who was in need or who was in distress or who needed encouragement or help. And there's where you'd find them. I could call their names, but you know their names already. And as we begin this series of studies, I told you up front that I realize I'm talking to one of the greatest groups of servants that there ever has been. And yet at the same time, we all need that word of caution. Don't ever get too busy to serve. It was not just the fact that the disciples were distracted with all of their busyness. It was also the fact that, in a sense, they were too proud to serve. Pride is truly the enemy of servanthood. It has been said of the sin of pride that pride attacks every single good thing in a person's life. When you think about that, I think that's absolutely true. If you were to picture in your mind that individual who is known and acknowledged as being a proud and haughty person, I dare say you'd have a difficult time thinking of any aspect of that person's life that has not been attacked by the sin of pride. In Romans chapter 12, verse 3, the apostle says, "For through the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you, not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think." It's pretty plain, isn't it? No commentary needed. I know what that means. I find that an easy verse to apply without even any explanation. If you study the gospel accounts, it seems that it was along about this time, chronologically, just before they assembled for the Passover, that they had just been arguing over who was going to be the greatest in the kingdom. In fact, the words had scarcely died from their lips as they proceeded into that upper room. And then, to add insult to injury, James and John had even had their mother to go to Jesus and ask a special favor for them on her behalf, that they could sit at the right and left hand of Jesus there on his throne. And that fact didn't do a whole lot of good to the cohesion of that group, to their unity and to their spirit of working together. In fact, the text says, "And the apostles were angry with the sons of Zebedee." There may be many of us who have some reason to be pleased with what we have been able to accomplish in our lives. There's nothing wrong with being pleased with our own accomplishments as long as we don't allow that to get out of control. I read that on one occasion, Muhammad Ali, during his time as the reigning heavyweight champion of the world in the sport of boxing, boarded an airplane on one occasion, and as he sat there in his seat, the stewardess up front had gone through the safety procedures, and she walked through the plane, making sure everybody had their seatbelt fastened, and he didn't have his on, and she said, "Sir, you'll need to put your seatbelt on." And Ali, I'm told, looked up at her and grinned real big in that way that he had back in those days, and he said, "Superman don't need no seatbelt." And she said, "Superman don't need no airplane. You better buckle that seatbelt." Sometimes our pride detracts our attention so that we don't even notice the opportunities to serve. And then the third thing, as we complete this study, they were too high to stoop down. You see, foot washing was always reserved for the lowest servant of the house. It was something that they wouldn't normally do. If you're a true servant of God, I dare say there have been many occasions that you have done what you don't normally do. We don't serve only those who are above us. We don't serve only those whom we like. We don't serve only those who are friendly, or only those who are just like us. We serve everyone. As someone has said, it is difficult to stand on a pedestal and wash the feet of those who are below. What kind of servant are we? Is there in our lives that constant effort toward better service? It's interesting that in that reading that Brad read to us at the beginning, Jesus makes reference to the fact that if you serve me, my Father honors you. And then in the next chapter, the chapter we just read from, John 13, Jesus said, as I've done to you, you should do to one another. And it appears to me that in the Lord's eyes, whether we're serving Jesus or whether we're serving God or whether we're serving our fellow man, our master is God. And it's always critical that a servant remember who his or her master is. John Kenneth Galbraith was an aide to President Lyndon Johnson, and on one occasion, Galbraith had asked his housekeeper to hold his calls because he was going to take a nap, and he did not need to be disturbed. And about the time that Galbraith had laid down, the telephone rang, and Emily, the housekeeper, answered it, and the voice on the other end said, "Get me Ken Galbraith. This is Lyndon Johnson." "I'm sorry, Mr. President. He's laying down, taking a nap." "Now look here. I'm the President of the United States." "I'm sorry, Mr. President, but he said not to disturb him." "You wake him up. I want to talk to him right now." "No, Mr. President, I'm sorry. I work for him. I don't work for you." Later, the president took Galbraith aside and he said, "You tell that woman that if she ever decides to stop working for you, I want her to go to work for me, because it's great to finally meet somebody who knows who they work for." We work for God. And that fact needs to affect everything we do. If you're not a child of God this morning, the New Testament teaches very simply, very clearly, that in order to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, you must believe in Jesus as God's Son, repent of your sins, confess your faith in Him, and be baptized for the remission of sins. If you've never done that, this would be the best time in the world. If you have done that and have become unfaithful in your service to the Lord, and particularly if your unfaithfulness has been public in nature, you need to publicly acknowledge your wrong and express your desire for forgiveness. And God has promised to receive and forgive and restore all of those who will come back. If you're subject to our Lord's invitation in any way, we invite you to respond as we stand and sing this song.